I'm sorry, Lucy. This is all my fault. David and my boys misbehaved. I told you, boys need a mother.
Max, what are you talking about?
I knew it. You're the head vampire.
Sam, don't start this again.
You're the secret that David was protecting.
Who's this?
Well, you passed the test.
Don't ever invite a vampire into your house, you silly boy. It renders you powerless.
Here we go, ladies and gentlemen. It is Wednesday, November the 3rd, 2010. You are listening to today's edition of the Ugly Truth Podcast, heard on this fine podcasting network, theuglytruth.podbean.com. Welcome to the program, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for attending. It is the day after. Now, what that usually means, ladies and gentlemen, whenever you hear that phrase, the day after, I remember back when I was a kid, they made a movie, made-for-TV movie called The Day After, and it was about what it was going to be like in a nuclear war, and what it would be like the day after, and then the day after that, and the day after that. Well, it is the day after something akin to a nuclear war, in that we had the Republicans sweeping into power. In a very substantive way, of course, they have taken over the House. They gained some more seats in the Senate and lots of governorships. Indeed, last night, if you were watching the election results, you saw red all over the place. And that is exactly the way certain people wanted it to appear, ladies and gentlemen. Now, I have not checked in with Limbaugh and Hannity and all the rest, but I can only imagine how they are spinning this thing. This is the rebirth of freedom in America and the rejection of socialism, and we're going to put the Democrats in their place. And no doubt, ladies and gentlemen, years and years ago, when I was just starting to cut my teeth, as the saying goes, on politics, when I was thinking that Rush Limbaugh was the greatest thing, not necessarily since sliced bread, but rather since sliced ham, that I would have bought into that. You know, that the fight for regular conservative Christian types was to align themselves with the Republicans against the Democrats. I never thought the day would come when I would start looking at such a sweep of Republicans into office as a harbinger of worst days ahead, but that clearly is the case. Now, no doubt those of you who listen to this program are going to wait for my theory, my conspiracy theory involving how the Jews engineered this for their own purposes. Well, you're not going to be disappointed, ladies and gentlemen, not the least of which is that you're going to get this in a double barrel fashion, because it's not just going to be me expanding on this topic, but also my very good friend, the one and only inimitable Mark Dankoff of markdankoff.com, who has a perspective on politics that really, for all intents and purposes, is unmatched anywhere. And I'm just going to go ahead and bring my special guest up, Mark Dankoff. Mark Dankoff, welcome to the program.
Well, Mark, it's good to be on. And once again, it's absolutely incredible that when you look at these gains on the part of the Republican Party in the House and the pickup of Senate seats, although they are not going to be the majority in the Senate, and, of course, the Republican significant gains, quote-unquote, in the gubernatorial races, that at the end of the day, the same people are winning and the same people are losing. Mm-hmm. And I think it's significant that, as you have pointed out to me before we went on the air this afternoon, that the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, according to Haaretz, lauds the reelection of pro-Israel stalwarts. There are also some new tools of the Israeli lobby that have been put into what will be the new American composition on Capitol Hill. And I think that the direction that we're traveling in is the same, regardless of who's winning these elections, because we are dealing with a one-party system that is controlled by the very people that you and I discuss week after week. And I thought it was very notable that certain issues that really, in my judgment, had they been discussed, would have accentuated a real change in direction, were missing from the debates in virtually all of these races around the country. Mm-hmm. And so I would urge American conservatives and Christian voters who don't buy into this pro-Zionist New World Order nonsense to note very carefully the money trail in these elections. And I have some figures in front of me provided by the Washington Report for Middle East Affairs in regard to how much pro-Israeli PAC money was going into these races. But it's also, again, noteworthy the complete absence of certain themes in these debates around the country that indicate that there will be no substantive change of any kind in the right direction. And as I said to you earlier, Mark, it's amazing to me that people in the United States have a historical memory that is not even 2 hours long, because if you go back to just 2006, when the Republicans lost control of Capitol Hill, it was duly noted at that time with a Republican president and up to that point a Republican Hill since 1994, that George W. Bush and his Republican compatriots had doubled the national debt and had embroiled this country in an illegal, unconstitutional, and highly ill-advised and unwinnable perpetual war in the Middle East for all of the usual interests. Mm-hmm. We are now led to believe, of course, that now, just 4 years later, that the virtual millennium has arrived with the return of the Republicans to control of the House, to a strengthened Republican position in the Senate, although not the majority control that they were hoping for. And that supposedly this is going to usher in 2012, their best possible challenge to Barack Obama. And, of course, as you and I already know, there's no question in my mind that we will have a pro-Zionist, pro-New World Order, neoconservative running for the Republican Party for the presidency in 2012, in essence guaranteeing the same outcome that is cemented as of today.
Absolutely. Before we get into the particulars of the election, I just wanted to touch on a few what I felt were pertinent news stories. I assume, Mark, that you heard about the hostage-taking situation at the Catholic Church in Baghdad that resulted in several dozen people being killed. The interesting thing about this is that the people who were there taking the hostages, one of the victims of this, said that they heard these gunmen saying that they that part of their reason for doing this was because of the Quran burning situation that was boiling up in this country back in September. You know, you'll remember that we had pastor, and I put that word in big quotation marks, Pastor Terry Jones of the Dove World Outreach Center in Gainesville, Florida, on this program, where we challenged him with his plans, vis-a-vis his plans, to burn the Quran on September the 11th. And one of the things that we pointed out in this is, Mr. Jones, have you not stopped to consider the negative ramifications that are associated with this, such as the danger to our troops, and of course, just infuriating Muslims worldwide by doing this stupid publicity stunt? And, of course, his response was that, well, I hadn't even thought about that. Well, here we can see one of the first tangible fruits of his asinine idea to burn the Quran on September the 11th, in that close to 50 Christians were killed. Now, interestingly enough, I sent an email to the good Pastor Terry Jones just this morning, and I said, congratulations, Pastor, because as a result of your half-assed, harebrained ideas of burning the Quran in this country, you now have the direct responsibility of almost 50 Christians being murdered. You have their blood on your hands. His response to me was, no, 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 this is just the way Islam is. This is the way it's always been. It's never tolerated anybody. To which I responded, that's not true, Mr. Jones. As I pointed out in the interview that I did with you back in August, there are hundreds of Christian churches and shrines scattered throughout the Middle East, amongst all of these Muslim countries. In fact,
including Iran, we might add.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, I was shocked to learn today, Mark, do you know how many Christians are in Egypt alone? Almost 8 million Christians.
Yes.
8 million. Now, that is an incredible number. Why are these people still alive? Why haven't their heads been cut off? Why haven't their churches been burned down? Why haven't they been forced by the sword to convert? So, I haven't heard yet back from Pastor Terry Jones concerning this the situation involving the murder of these people. But again, ladies and gentlemen, this is why I go to the lengths. This is why we go to the lengths that we do on this show, in underscoring the dangers of throwing gasoline on this inferno that is raging, that we refer to here as anti-Islamic hysteria. Okay, when you have a group of people who already feel threatened and under the gun because bombs are being dropped on their homes, on their wives, on their children, their schools, their hospitals, the last thing you want to do in a situation like that is to make it worse by adding to this hysteria with all of these ridiculous articles, and of course the whole plan to burn the Quran. Obviously, he obviously didn't pull this idea out of his head. I'm not going to say where he got it from in polite company on this radio program, but anyway, that's just one thing I wanted to bring up very quickly. The other interesting article that I ran into was an op-ed piece written by Washington Post correspondent David Broder. His contention is that if Obama wants to improve the American economy, that what he needs to do is to open up war against Iran. Now, I want you to just consider, ladies and gentlemen, the illogic of this. We're broke right now because we're already at war with two countries, right? Iraq and Afghanistan. And yet Broder says that things are going to be better if we open up this war to include Iran. Now, let me just say this, ladies and gentlemen. The general reaction to Broder's asinine idea has been to question his sanity and his intelligence. But I'm going to just take this a step further, and what I'm going to posit here is that Broder was being used as an emissary for this, okay? It is no mystery where David Broder's loyalties lie, where he spends his Saturday nights, what his religious affiliation happens to be. What Broder was doing here in writing this article and suggesting that if Obama would simply unleash hell upon a bunch of innocent people in Iran, that the economy would get better, what he was doing, as I said, was acting as an emissary for the financial interests in this country that are completely held captive by the same people pushing for this war against Iran, who are responsible for getting us involved in this war against Iraq and Afghanistan. And what they were saying to him was, Mr. President, we have our hand on the financial spigot in this country, and any time we want to, we can open up that spigot, and the country will be awash with cash again. Let's not forget, Mr. President, the reason that we're in the dire financial straits that we're in right now is because we shut off the flow of cash years ago in order to put pressure on the presidency to succumb to our demands. And as soon as you open up the floodgates of war against Iran, we are going to open up the floodgates of cash in the United States, and you will be hailed not only as one of the greatest wartime presidents America has ever had, but one of the greatest financial wizards in having rescued a dying economy and bringing back peace, and or not peace, but prosperity to Americans. This was my prediction months ago, ladies and gentlemen, that as soon as the war against Iran got started, that all of a sudden you would see the American economy booming, because what these interests would love nothing more is to have these stupid American evangelical Christians associating financial prosperity with going to war against Israel's enemies. And that is exactly what David Broder was suggesting in this piece. Mark Dankoff, what are your thoughts on both of the articles that I just mentioned?
Well, it's just business as usual. I was on Press TV Tehran a couple of nights ago, and of course we were talking about this front page story in the Wall Street Journal of Monday, November the 1st, which is entitled "Yemen Covert Role Pushed, Foiled Bomb Plot Heightens Talk of Putting Elite U.S. Squads in CIA Hands." In other words, this piece by Julian Barnes and Adam Intus of the Wall Street Journal of Monday indicates that you're going to have all of these special operations command units placed under CIA authority to do all kinds of black operational things in Yemen, expanding this whole thing now to Yemen. And the Wall Street Journal now, not Mark Glenn or Mark Dankoff, the Wall Street Journal describes these units as elite hunter-killer teams under CIA authority. And it goes on to explain that by placing these special operations command units under the CIA, that this gets around a technicality in American law in regard to notifying the host government, in this case the government of Yemen, of what it is that we're doing with these so-called elite hunter-killer teams. And although the Wall Street Journal mentions something about keeping Congress notified, there's absolutely no evidence at all that Congress is going to be notified about a thing, except presumably for those elements of our of the usual committees and subcommittees in the House and Senate that are controlled by Israeli assets. And certainly if you look at the House and Senate intelligence committees, the House and Senate Homeland Security Committees and Subcommittees, the House and Senate Foreign Relations Committees, this is where you see how all of this Israeli PAC money plays off, pays off in regard to ensuring that as things like this continue to progress, the American people are left completely in the dark in regard to what's going on and how it's being conducted, and just how blatantly illegal this stuff is, and how blatantly unconstitutional it is in terms of what is essentially an American military role now expanding into Yemen with absolutely no input from Congress and without any formal declaration of law of war, as Article 1, Section 8 of our Constitution requires. Mm-hmm. So with this whole situation, this whole scenario, when Press TV said, well, you know, why is the media fanning the flames of all of this? I simply said to Press TV, and of course the interview is on YouTube now, I said, well, look at who controls the American media. These major media consortiums, it's provable that you have a disproportionate pro-Israel Zionist component that is working through these media consortiums to fan the flames of all of this. And who are the usual winners and losers? But in this case, who are the winners when these sorts of policies are being promoted? You have the Israeli lobby, you have the central banking communities, you have the multinational energy consortiums, and you have arms manufacturers. Mm-hmm. These are the winners of these policies, and presumably David Broder thinks that these are the people that ought to continue quote-unquote controlling and quote-unquote winning and quote-unquote profiting by the present state of the American political and economic system. I mean, it's absolutely sick. Mm-hmm. And when you look at these election results of last night, a classic example, as you and I have discussed, Mark, is what happened in the state of Illinois. Presumably, the Republicans and the Tea Partiers and the Fox News crowd are absolutely ecstatic today over the fact that Mark Kirk graduates now from being an Israeli asset in the House of Representatives to being one of Israel's chief assets in the United States Senate, and that he is now going to occupy the seat once held by President Obama. Mm-hmm. And when you get into what Janet McMahon has to tell us in the current edition of the Washington Report on Middle East Affairs about Kirk, the number figures are quite instructive in regard to how much money the Jewish lobby invested in getting him elected over a Democratic opponent who presumably was as pro-Israel as Kirk. Mm-hmm. And I note in the Washington Report of Middle East Affairs that they photographed something on page 28 in Janet McMahon's piece about all of these Israel firsters that shows www.kirkforsenate.com, United States Senate. And it duly notes that Kirk, has received more pro-Israel PAC contributions this year than any other House or Senate candidate. And in this photograph taken from Kirk's own Kirk for Senate webpage, it shows his name written in Hebrew. And, of course, I can read it because I had Hebrew at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School in Chicago, albeit 30 years ago. It's very rusty, but I read just enough Hebrew to be able to make out the fact that, yeah, these are, in fact, Hebrew letters spelling out Mark Kirk, reading from right to left. And when you look at this whole thing in conjunction with Broder's piece in the Washington Post, in conjunction with Haaretz's essay on how IPAC is just ecstatic over the reelection of all these so-called pro-Israel stalwarts, it should be woefully apparent to anyone with a brain in his or her head as to how bought and paid for this whole process is. And, mm-hmm. and one other example is Rand Paul in Kentucky. Presumably the Tea Party folks and American conservatives around the country are ecstatic over the fact that Ron Paul was elected to the U.S. Senate. Ron Paul's son, Rand Paul, by the way, is on the front page of USA Today in the current edition that came out this morning in the newsstand. And yet what largely went unnoticed is something that you and I noticed, Mark, and that the American Free Press covered, and that is that Rand Paul, after he did receive the Republican nomination for this U.S. Senate race, made it abundantly clear that his basic foreign policy orientation was pro-Israel and pro-Zionist. Mm-hmm. I want to emphasize that. Mm-hmm. For those of you listening to this program, Rand Paul, in my judgment, based upon what was published by the American Free Press, in an official statement issued by Rand Paul some months ago after he was nominated, it becomes abundantly clear that he's controlled by the same people that control Mark Kirk, who is going to be the incoming U.S. Senator in Illinois. Mm-hmm. And in saying this, Mark, we get back to, I think, what would be the legitimate themes of a pro-America first, pro-Constitution, pro-freedom, pro-economic growth policy or platform. If you or I had been running in that race, Mark, presumably we would have talked about ending the Federal Reserve Board's existence, placing monetary policy back where it belongs constitutionally in the hands of the Congress. We would have been talking about ending a direct federal income tax on American citizens once and for all, repealing the 16th Amendment. We would have done exactly what David Broder didn't do. We wouldn't have been talking about starting a new war that is unwinnable and unbelievably expensive and being financed and will be financed with borrowing of foreign capital. We would have talked about getting out of these globalist trade treaties like NAFTA and GATT and the World Trade Organization, among others, that have absolutely decimated not only the American manufacturing economy, but have decimated America's sovereignty over its economy. Mm-hmm. So again, economically, we would have said end the Fed, end a direct federal income tax on American citizens, get out of all of these globalist trade treaties and all of these globalist alliances that are rooted in the ideology of one world government. Let's reemphasize the necessity of rebuilding the manufacturing sector of our economy and not deliberately exporting it abroad. Then, of course, we get into the foreign policy. You and I would have been saying, hey, we need less military spending, not more, that this $14 trillion debt, national debt that we've got with the meter running, has as much to do with this overextended, burgeoning military and intelligence establishment as it does anything else. And yet all these Tea Party people, most of them seem to be with the war party, with the interventionist crowd, and with the Israeli lobby. And that is the ultimate Achilles heel, I think, of this Tea Party Republican renaissance that's being talked about in the media today. Mm-hmm. None of these people are saying we need to get out of Iraq. We need to get out of Afghanistan. We need not to go to war with Iran. We need to get all of this Israeli PAC money out of our political races. And once and for all, we need to have a national defense policy that is rooted in legitimately defending our homeland, yes, securing our borders, yes, but getting out of unwinnable situations that we should not be involved in, and where we continue giving a blank check to a series of American chief executives to start wars that have not been constitutionally declared by the Congress and that have been falsely explained to the American people. I heard none of this in any of these campaigns around the country. Mm-hmm. And I think the real reason why you and I didn't hear anything about it is because the New World Order, pro-globalist, pro-Zionist crowd has their bets covered completely. Mm-hmm. And now, of course, whoopee-doo, right? We've got Mark Kirk. We have a Republican in Barack Obama's Senate seat in Illinois. Well, whoopee-doo, right? Because he is even more controlled by these globalist and Zionist interests, arguably, than even the president himself. Mm-hmm. So this is the context in which we need to see this whole thing.
Well, the thing is, for me, Mark, when I saw weeks ago or even a month ago that we were going to see this giant red tide sweep over America in the form of Republicans being elected to not just to both houses but also to the various governorships, what I saw here is, okay, they don't have to switch hands from Democrat to Republican as far as control of Congress goes, because the Democrats are just as willing to sign the bottom line, sign on the dotted line vis-a-vis these wars in the Middle East as a Republican is. So why would they need at this time to swing control of Congress over to the Republicans? Well, the answer is in the fact that we have a president right now who is dragging his feet vis-a-vis widening these wars to include Iran and Syria and onward. My personal opinion is that Obama has not signed on to this because he's got the military pulling him on one side, and he's got the Israelis pulling him on the other side. And the military is saying, no, we cannot do this, Mr. President. We cannot even control Iraq and Afghanistan. If we open up this war to include Iran, then we will be finished. So how do they get around getting the president busy vis-a-vis getting American boots on the ground in Iran and Syria? Very easy. You put a Republican Congress in control, a Congress that can declare war. This is the thing. You know, we have kind of lost sight of the fact that the president does not declare war. He just executes war that is declared by Congress. So if you have control of both houses, and in this case, obviously, they don't, at least in terms of down party lines, they don't have control of the Congress, but they have enough control necessary in order to get a declaration of war. That's number one. Number two, and it didn't take any time last night for that word to pop up in all of the discussion that was taking place vis-a-vis the elections and the fact that so many Republicans had been moved into these positions of power. Impeachment. The topic came up last night on Fox News. They said, well, now the Republicans have enough people in the House of Representatives to begin moving ahead with impeachment against the president. Why would they even bring something like that up? He hasn't done anything illegal that we know of. We don't have any scandals floating out there on the tabloids or even in mainstream news for anybody.
Well, let's put it this way. He's done some things that are illegal that are no different from what his predecessor was doing, right?
Exactly. I mean, yes, yeah. Absolutely, yes. But my point is that them bringing this up, this is going to be the thing that they use to maneuver Barack Hussein Obama into going to war against Iran. They are going to put the screws to him the way that they did against Bill Clinton vis-a-vis Monica Lewinsky. Now, who knows what they're going to dig up? Is it going to be the issue of his birth certificate? I think that that's very possible. Is it going to be some other issue that kind of just pops up out of nowhere the way that the Monica Lewinsky scandal did? I think it's very possible. But that is going to – I will go ahead and go out on a limb here and make my prediction that that is the mechanism by which they are going to put the heat on El Presidente to get this war against Iran started. They are going to start – some kind of scandal is going to pop up. And then all of a sudden, they're going to be talking about the I word over and over and over again. And that's how they're going – and even if they don't get their war, even if Israel doesn't get the war she demands, simply dragging him through the same embarrassing, humiliating process that they did to Bill Clinton. And believe me, I didn't shed any tears over what Bill Clinton was going through at that time. Even though I was a knave and didn't really understand politics very well, I loved watching him squirm because I just hated the guy. Nevertheless, looking back on this as an older, wiser man, I can see now what was going on, that Israel and her partisans were doing this because Bill Clinton was putting pressure on Israel to ease up on the issue of settlements in the West Bank and to come to the bargaining table and to try to make some kind of peace deal with the Palestinians, in addition to the fact that he would not go to war against Iraq the way that he had agreed to do when the same Jewish interests backed him in his first campaign prior to the 1992 election. So that is what they're going to do. They are going to make an example of Obama the way that they did Clinton, so that as a warning to all elected members of any branch of government in this country, if you screw with us, this is what we're going to do to you. Mark Dankoff.
Well, that's exactly right. And one alternative that's even more sobering to contemplate is the of a false flag incident, which drags the president kicking and screaming,
yes,
if he's still moving,
yes,
into a war that perhaps he doesn't want because it's occurred to him that we are, in fact, overextended. Mm-hmm. And you've identified something here that I really wonder about, Mark, and that's the whole business of the American military and the American intelligence communities. I mean, presumably, the guys that are out front, on point, including the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, will say whatever it is they're supposed to say, the kinds of predictable neocon ideologies that we've been listening to ad nauseum, especially in the last 10 years. But who knows how many legitimate American military officers in the various branches of our armed forces and how many American intelligence analysts with our 16 intelligence agencies think more along the same lines as Philip Giraldi or Ray McGovern or Paul Craig Roberts or you or I, that these policies are unsustainable, that they're suicidal, that they're bankrupting us economically and morally and politically, and that what we need is not more of this garbage in Yemen and not more of this garbage in Iran and not more of this garbage in Somalia, not more of this garbage in Pakistan, but to get back to a responsible America First foreign policy. Now, how many of these folks in the military think the way we do, how many of them in the intelligence community have come to these conclusions that we have, I do not know. But that to me is the $64,000 question, because it may well be that there is more of a struggle than we might imagine, mm-hmm, within the halls of government over which of these world views is going to prevail in whatever moves the American government makes next. Mm-hmm. And certainly when we start talking about getting involved in a preemptive war with Iran, either directly or simply sanctioning Israel to do it. I don't think one has to be a graduate of a military academy to figure out that this is fraught with danger politically, morally, and militarily. Of course, having lived over there, I'm always reminding people that they need to get a copy of Dilip Hero's book, which deals with the Iran-Iraq War. It's probably the pivotal book written in English on all the details of that eight-year conflict between 1980 and 1988. One of the things that one is profoundly impressed with is that the Iranian people are a resilient, resourceful, courageous, proud people. And despite the incredible political divisions that they have in their spectrum, as we do in ours in this country, from left to right, from Islamic to monarchist and all of this other stuff, you start talking about attacking them and invading them and violating their airspace and killing thousands of their own people without cause, they're going to fight back in ways that these neoconservatives can't even imagine. And that's going to take place not simply in terms of the Middle Eastern theater of operations, but it's going to take place worldwide. Ahmadinejad is clearly an intelligent man, a resourceful man. So are many of the other people in the Iranian government. And as they see these sabers continuing to be rattled, as they continue to hear statements made by the foreign minister of Israel that Israel ought to use nuclear weaponry preemptively against them and all the rest of this garbage, they're putting their ducks in a row. I don't have any inside information to know specifically what ducks are in a row, but our listeners can be reassured the Iranians are getting ready, and we are going to be in the fight of our lives, and Israel is going to be in the fight of its life if this stupidity coming out of Netanyahu and Avigdor Lieberman and Joseph Lieberman and Mark Kirk and Jim DeMint and all of these other people prevails. We need to reverse course. We need to reverse course now. And hopefully, again, we've got some people in the American intelligence and military communities that are not on board with these Zionist idiots and who will do whatever they can behind the scenes to keep this tragedy from unfolding. We can only hope.
Absolutely. As far as the intelligence and military people you're talking about, where there is this this war, this tug of war taking place in these different institutions, we can only assume rightly that this is in existence, because otherwise we clearly would be at war with Iran and Syria and other countries. So, you know, thank God that there are some people that have got some sense that have said, listen, you know, we just cannot do this. However, as you pointed out, Mark, the real wild card in all of this is the not just the possibility, but rather the likelihood that Israel is going to pull another one of her made-to-order false flag attacks, as she always does. I mean, as the old saying goes, if it ain't broke, why fix it? She has basically achieved everything she has in the last century, using this as the main ingredient in all of the disgusting dishes that she serves up. So why would she not do something like this again, another false flag attack? That's the first thing. The second thing is, you know, as you were saying all of this, Mark, it occurred to me, throughout the Islamic world, and I guarantee any country you go to, Arab or not, where you have people who are heavily invested in understanding the situation vis-a-vis the war on terror and whatnot, you listen in on the commentary in America amongst the conservatives, or even amongst the liberals for that matter. Okay, the liberals right now, they're whining and licking their wounds because they have taken such a heavy hit vis-a-vis, you know, the House and, of course, the governorships across the country. And then, of course, in the conservative camp, you know, they are, you know, using this, no doubt, as an indicator that Jesus is coming back any minute now because the Republicans have been swept into power. Around the rest of the world, they're looking at this and they're saying, my God, we have just moved the timetable up vis-a-vis war with Iran and Syria as a result of this. Now, the American people on both sides of the aisle, they do not realize what kind of contract they have just signed themselves onto by electing these people to office. What this means, as I said, is increased pressure upon the president in going forward with this war that, okay, at the very least, we can expect it to utterly destroy our economy. At the worst, you're talking about unforeseen consequences that may result in a war that would include Russia and China and some of these other non-important players on the world scene who just happen to be armed to the teeth with nuclear weapons. And so that really, to me, is the most striking thing about this. I haven't been out and about yet listening to the conversations that have been taking place, the political conversations amongst my neighbors, but no doubt, and I hate to be so pessimistic here, they do not understand the bigger ramifications of what took place last night.
That's exactly right. And they're too busy focused on the World Series, right?
What's that? The World Series?
But this is where it is.
That's the joke. I haven't watched a sports event. I honestly can't remember the last time I saw one. That's how unplugged into the world I am vis-a-vis sports and whatnot. But you're exactly right. That's what they're talking about. I assume there was a World Series that took place?
Yes, and my team, the San Francisco Giants, won the series for the first time in its history. And as I joked to you the other night, Mark, maybe this means that the end of Don't Ask, Don't Tell is going to be announced by the president. But by the way, lest those of you who listen to our show be unduly depressed, this Haaretz article where IPAC lauds the reelection of all these pro-Israel people, boy, I tell you, folks, we've got a really, really dynamite lineup for you coming up in the American House and Senate. IPAC reminds us that Senator-elect Richard Blumenthal, Democrat of Connecticut, has now been elected, of course, to the United States Senate. It is Richard Blumenthal, by the way, folks, that manufactured a fake war record in Vietnam. IPAC, nonetheless, is thrilled that he is now representing his country as a perjurer-in-chief in the United States Senate. And here's one for you, folks. Boy, I tell you, you ought to be excited by this one. We ought to ask John Hagee here in Cornerstone Church in San Antonio if he's really thrilled with this IPAC agenda, because, boy, we've got a dynamite guy just elected, Democrat Rhode Island, Congressman-elect David Cicilline. Haaretz informs us that Cicilline has now become the fourth openly gay member of Congress, and he is the third Jewish gay member of Congress. So for those of you who are absolutely depressed over all of this, by George, there's hope, right? Because God's chosen people have won again.
Well, you know, the amazing thing is, if you or I manage to get through the screeners that work on Limbaugh's show or Hannity's show or Glenn Beck or any of the others, and we were to use simply this one article here, okay, which, let's face it, this is one of probably 100 that have been written in the last 24 hours coming from Jewish sources, okay, whether it's Haaretz or whether it's the Jerusalem Post or Mariv or any of the other ones, basically championing the fact that these pro-Israel members have been elected, and this all indicates that happy days are here again. Vis-a-vis, I know I keep using that phrase. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, that's the phrase of the month for me. That happy days are here again regarding America and Israel and this unbreakable bond that we have with each other. If we were to use just this one article, Mark, coming out of Haaretz, as proof that we do not have any control over our foreign policy apparatus in this country, and that instead it has been hijacked by this foreign hostile force, well, we would be, after being called every name in the book, we would be laughed off the program. And this is the amazing thing, is that, you know, this train is barreling down the tracks at us at 100 miles an hour, okay? And it literally is just like a few seconds away from pummeling us, and yet we don't hear any of the... We're so busy looking at the pretty scenery in the opposite direction, we don't hear this train barreling down the tracks at us, at our backs. And I tell you, it's just, I hate to depress the people listening to this program, but, you know, the stupidity is absolutely stupefying. absolutely stupefying. Are we going to hear any talk about this on Limbaugh's show? Or no, they're going to be talking about, oh, we've got a, you know, we finally got a chance now to roll back socialism and, you know, to overturn health care. You know, when I was on Press TV a couple of weeks ago, and they were asking me about the whole don't ask, don't tell thing that had been lifted by this federal judge, I believe it was out in California, they were asking me what the reasons for this could be. And I said, well, it's very simple. It's taking place right before election time. Okay. Now, traditionally speaking, the Republicans have been the pro-military party. The Democrats are still carrying, to a certain degree, rightly, the baggage that that came from the Vietnam era, where Democrats were associated with people who spat on our troops when they came back from Vietnam and being very anti-military. So something like this happening right before the election, where there's this assault on our military traditions by allowing openly gay men and women to serve in the military, this could only benefit Republicans, okay, in something like this. That's number one. Number two, the whole cartridge toner bomb drama that took place last week. People were saying, oh, Obama did this in order to help himself in the elections. No, This is going to help the Republicans. This is what I said in a follow-up Press TV interview. That I'm sorry, you know, Mark and I seem to be talking about Press TV a lot, but that's where we have been busy these days. I said, no, this is going to help the Republicans out, because the Republicans of the two parties, they're the ones who are considered to be tough on terrorism, and we got to go kill them over there before they come over here and kill us. And, you know, you don't see me pat myself on the back very often, Mark, but in this case, I think both of my predictions regarding these two events, the don't ask, don't tell drama, and then, of course, the whole ink toner cartridge thing that they bore out in the fact that we had all of these pro-war, pro-Israel, and let's just face it, anti-American Republicans elected. And I wanted to ask you something else, Mark, if I could, because we had not discussed this off the air before the program. The governorships, this is very interesting. What possible benefit could Israel have gained, from getting all of these governorships captured by Republicans? What do you think?
Well, there was discussion of this on Mr. Murdoch's Fox News last night. The chief thing cited by the establishment press, of course, is the ability to be involved in all of the major redrawing of lines. Prior to the next election cycle, there's a major move, of course, to be redrawing congressional lines and all this redistricting that presumably may have some degree of impact as the insiders continue to manipulate elections. But one thing that comes to my mind in regard to these gubernatorial races is that if you have all of these new Republican governors, who presumably reflect overall the same pro-Israel, pro-Zionist orientation that we have up in the Hill, these are guys that would have all the power in the world to help facilitate these ongoing unconstitutional uses of the American military in state and local law enforcement,
exactly.
For example.
Yes, exactly.
So you would have a situation where a governor could declare a state of emergency at the request of an American president or even without it, and basically invite the United States military and these federal intelligence agencies to run roughshod over what remains of any lines of delineation between state and local security and law enforcement agencies and the American military and the feds. And I think that that's probably the most significant thing in terms of achieving eventually, when the right quote-unquote national emergency comes along, achieving the complete suspension of constitutional rights, the complete suspension of the Bill of Rights, the complete suspension of habeas corpus by these governors turning over their individual states to the American military and intelligence communities when the time is right.
Yeah, I think you're right. The thing that I was thinking of immediately as I heard about these gubernatorial races, swinging so heavily in favor of the Republicans was this thing that took place a month or so ago, where we found out the state of Pennsylvania had contracted with an Israeli security firm to spy on anti-war activists and whatnot. I believe it was the ITRR. Is that correct? The International...
Yeah, the Institute for Terrorism Research and Response, which is an Israeli front. It can be found online, by the way, at www.terrorresponse.org.
Right, and so here we had a state contracting with them, giving them access to all sorts of personal information. I mean, let's face it. You know, the states are able to open the door for all sorts of personal abuses in terms of, you know, very personal sensitive information on citizens. You know, I mean, your driver's license bureau has a wealth of information on you sitting in their computers. And so with a company like this contracting with the states, they have access to all sorts of information, and also included in that, let's not forget, that all of the various police agencies and the National Guard units, they all answer to the governor, okay? He is the chief executive of the state, and if he hands down an order, either to his state police, to his county sheriffs, or to municipal police, you know, that you are to cooperate with this so-and-so security firm that the state has contracted to do such-and-such, that could be absolutely devastating, okay? What Israel would maybe not be able to achieve, because there's a certain amount of pushback taking place within our military and intelligence apparatuses at the federal level, they may still be able to achieve by getting the assistance of the governorships of these various states for something like this. So that was immediately what I thought of when I thought about all of the governor's races that went red, so to speak, that, you know, we're going to see a lot more states now contracting with these Mossad and Shin Bet-linked security firms coming out of Israel in order to spy on all sorts of people and possibly even to cause them problems. Let's face it, having the State Department of Revenue come down on you can be just as bad for you as if the IRS were to come knocking on your door. And with this kind of personal information that these security firms would have access to, they could make that all the more easy. Would you agree with me on that, Mark?
Absolutely, and I think it's entirely noteworthy, returning to your theme of the utilization of this Institute of Terrorism Research and Response, this Israeli intelligence front that is working with our Homeland Security Department and conducting all these seminars with our military and law enforcement people around the country. And by the way, it's based in Philadelphia and in Tel Aviv. That ought to tell you something right there.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the Ed Rendell, the Jewish pro-Zionist former mayor of Philadelphia, who subsequently was governor of Pennsylvania with all of this going on, you know, you now have a situation transpiring where, if I'm remembering this correctly, don't we have, Mark, a Republican elect gubernatorial gentleman in the state of Pennsylvania?
Actually, I didn't follow that last night, but...
I believe so, and I don't remember the gentleman's name, but I believe that we now have a Republican governor-elect in Pennsylvania. And by the way, Pat Toomey is a Republican U.S. Senate-elect in Pennsylvania, taking over Arlen Specter's seat. And of course, C-Stack, his Democratic opponent, was a Israeli-backed candidate, but so is Toomey. And this is precisely the point. This guy, whose name I can't remember, that I believe was just elected in the state of Pennsylvania, if my memory hasn't failed me here, has said absolutely nothing about this ITRR scandal in the state of Pennsylvania, where all kinds of responsible but very diverse American political dissidents across the spectrum in that state were being monitored by this ITRR, and files being compiled on them that were being turned over to both federal agencies, apparently, as well as law enforcement agencies in the state of Pennsylvania. And, folks, these are people that are involved with animal rights groups, mainstream ones.
Mm-hmm.
These are people that are about as much of a threat to national security as your people that attend League of Women Voters meetings and PTA meetings. Mm-hmm, I mean, this is just, it's just preposterous, the profile of the people that were being spied upon. These are folks, that, again, that have little or no connection to the Middle East controversy, little or no connection to anything that anyone would even remotely suspect of being involved in violent or subversive activity. That's what's particularly terrifying about all of this. And as far as I know, there has been absolutely no discussion of this whole situation in Pennsylvania on the part of these folks that have been just elected to the U.S. Senate, in this case, Pat Toomey from Pennsylvania, and whoever this gentleman is that I believe was elected to the governorship there in that state, a Republican. No comment whatsoever about it. That ought to tell you something.
Well, what I would like to impart upon everybody before closing out the program is this. You know, ladies and gentlemen, some of you out there periodically are critical of the approach that we take on this program, that that we're just too we're just not subtle enough in what we're saying, that we're, you know, we use a sledgehammer when all we need is a little framing hammer, attack hammer, or something like that. Right now, this is proof positive, okay? Proof positive that the usual means are not working, okay? These people got swept into power last night because our entreaties in trying to make them understand what is happening in their world is not working, okay? Now, when you've got a really bad headache, normally, you know, you take two of whatever, aspirin or Advil or Tylenol or whatever. Okay, but when the headache is really bad and two of them don't work, then you have to up the dosage. And what I'm saying to you is this. Don't worry about what they're going to call you. Don't worry about the names and the accusations. Remember the old saying, sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me. If you entertain any notions, any hopes of taking this country back as rotted to the core as it appears to be, okay? Nevertheless, we are going to have to ratchet things up because they just did. They just did in a dramatic way. We are much closer to war now than we have ever been. And by that, of course, what I'm talking about is wider war, because we're already up to our eyeballs in war as it is. We are much closer to it than we have been in a long, long time. And that means that you're going to have to get louder and you're going to have to be more bold and let them call you whatever they call you. Big deal. It isn't going to hurt you. What do you have to lose? I'll tell you what you have to lose. You have to lose everything that means anything to you. That's number one. Number two, what I want to tell the folks out there, I realize it's a bit off topic, but again, I mentioned in my program the other day to keep in your prayers one of the listeners of this program who is a good friend, not just to me, but to Mark Dankoff, Brian up in Canada, who I just found out this morning he is going to be going through what was going to be just an operation to put some stents in. He's actually going to have to go through triple bypass, and so this is a very serious operation, and so I would just ask those of you out there who are the praying types to keep Brian in your prayers. Anyway, Mark, as I said, we are at the end of the program here. I'd like to just hand the baton over to you for the last words, and then we are going to say sayonara to our listeners.
Thanks, Mark. I would just like to warn our listeners that even with good people, they occasionally need to be careful about stuff that they're running. My good friend Herman Otten of Christian News, very profoundly Orthodox Lutheran pastor and anti-Zionist par excellence, nonetheless has run something on page 2 of the October 4th Christian News that Mark Glenn and I are going to be taking a deeper look at. There's a guy out there named Dan Wooding, founder of Assist Ministries, who is running the testimony of a group called the Farsi Christian News Network, FCNN.com, indicating that the Iranian government security forces have burned hundreds of Bibles back in May of this year in Iran. Any evidence of this, folks? Or is this yet another piece of Israeli disinformation that has made it even into a good publication like Herman Otten's Christian News? Be aware of this stuff in the days ahead. as we continue our march to what I think will be one of the greatest tragedies in human history, unless God intervenes.
Absolutely. Let's not discount for a moment that indeed that's not just a possibility, it is a likelihood, ladies and gentlemen. As Jesus said, ask and you shall receive. What father would offer his son stones when he asks for bread? And we are begging for bread, ladies and gentlemen, begging for the bread of peace. That is what we need if we are to save what is left of this world. Anyway, I want to thank my good friend Mark Dankoff for coming on as my indispensable and invaluable co-host in this program. And we will just keep plugging along, ladies and gentlemen, as best we can. Thank you for all of the kind words, and emails, and really letters of correspondence that come into this program. You all contribute to this program greatly. This is not just me or Mark Dankoff or the other voices and faces who are heard and seen on this program. It's all of us. Because every day I get something from somebody where their perspective on things is so unique that it makes me take a double take and I say, wow, that is really interesting. So not only do I thank you for that, but I ask that you keep doing it. In the meantime, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for attending. We will be back ASAP. In the meantime, do what you can to save what is left of this damaged and dying world. If not for yourself, then certainly for those who are going to follow in your stead. And as always, ladies and gentlemen, keep the faith.
The fact of the matter is, we are coming from a country that experiences terror daily. Our purpose was to document the event. The fact of the matter is, we are coming from a country that experiences terror daily. Our purpose was to document the event. The fact of the matter is, we are coming from a country that experiences terror daily. Our purpose was to document the event. Our purpose was to document the event. Our purpose was to document the event. Our purpose was to document the event.